Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Sting stories right after this. In real estate transactions, we follow three rules. It's called location, location, and location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules when we're talking to the police or government agents. Rule one is don't say anything. Rule two is keep your mouth shut. And rule three is shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is that all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. That's why judges, in their opinions, make these kinds of short, terse statements like, listen to this one. First judge, he said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? And he said that in U.S. v. Dickerson. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester, wouldn't I? Listen to the second judge. He said, you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. He said that in Belknap versus United States. Now, you know, if I said something like that, you'd say, well, he's obstructing justice. Now, listen to what this third judge had to say. He said, quote, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted, in Marchetti versus United States. Pretty wise, in my view. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free, and you can call and order one right now. Now, our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our archives page at georgegordon.org. We've been talking about sting stories. Stings are, in reality, from our perspective, tests of certain constitutional rights or privileges and immunities or statutes, judgments. Things that oftentimes are carried into operation, like the draft, we mentioned the last program, or school registration, or community service. You know, these are things that are carried out every day. They work day in and day out, and they don't work against you. they work because you make them work. You're the one that goes up there and signs that school registration. You're the one that goes in there and signs up for community service. You're the one that went down and signed up for the marriage license, birth certificate, driver's license, business license, and so on, which created an in-rem jurisdiction over you, an admiralty jurisdiction, which bypasses your constitutional rights, such as Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. Now, if you want to bypass your rights, join the Army. You know, you can't beat an Army enlistment contract for destroying your constitutional rights, your Bill of Rights under the Constitution. I mean, that's perfect. It's been working that way for a couple hundred years. Now, most people do not want rights. They bitch like hell when they don't have them, but they don't want them. They don't want the responsibility that comes with rights. Rights require responsibility. We don't want that. What people want is a security blanket. I think my first wife summed it up quite nicely when she said, "Why don't you go get a real job?" That's right. She said, "Why don't you go get a real job?" What she wanted was the security that comes from a regular paycheck every Friday. And, you know, when I was young, when my wife and I were first married, and I had a job at International Harvester, or I had a job at Lindy LaFranchi's, every month or every week, there's a check that comes in, and you know exactly how much it's going to be and how much you're going to budget and how much you're going to spend. When you're an independent contractor, when you're an entrepreneur, you have no regular paychecks. You do not know when your next paycheck is going to arrive or whether it's going to arrive. You not only don't know when, you don't know if. And so for women, that's very disconcerting. And so my first wife, she was kind of upset about that. Now, it isn't that I didn't make a good living, you know, as a contractor, but it's that I don't know. That kind of bothered her, I think. Now, when we're dealing here with law, there's a lot of I don't knows. And we would like to have a more, well, I know how this is going to work. I know how this is going to come out. I got to know. See? So when you have a driver's license and marriage license and so on, there's somebody somewhere who's going to tell you when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. And that, quite frankly, is what most people want. Now, rights require that you determine when you're going to get up in the morning. You determine what you're going to do in between going to bed at night. And most people don't want that responsibility. Now, for the few of you that would like to indulge in that concept, let's think about this for a minute. One time, I got a subpoena. Actually, it was a subpoena. It was a civil action from the sheriff. He came out here and he said, "There's a hearing, a child support hearing on the blank day of blank in front of Judge Brown in here in Gainesville, and you're ordered to appear there." Now, what they were after, see, after I divorced my first wife, actually, she divorced me. I was the bad guy, so she divorced me. And so there was an imposition of child support. You know how that works. And so I didn't make my child support payments. I didn't deny it. And so, in fact, I moved from Idaho to Missouri, and so they have what they call an interstate compact. Interstate compact. And there's a child support enforcement agency, and it's nationwide, and it comes under admiralty. It doesn't deal with the constitutional rights or the Constitution at all. It's contractual. And I had a contract. I had a marriage license, and the thing ended in divorce, and the children all had birth certificates. You know, I did all the things that I was told to do and when I was told to do. That was in the days when I needed somebody to tell me when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between, and it worked fine. Then one day I decided, I'm tired of this. I don't want people telling me that I got to get up and go to work and punch the time clock and go to bed at night and one thing and another. And so when this divorce came down, to fill you in here a little bit, I didn't sign the final decree. I did not want a change. I did not want to substitute. I didn't want to interpose my divorce contract in place of my marriage contract. I figured, you know, this divorce is going to terminate my marriage contract, and I don't want any more contracts with states and foreign and alien gods. I want to get out of this contract crap, and so I just told Judge Carey, I said, no, I'm not going to sign this final decree. And he said, if you don't sign the final decree, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And I said, I'm going to appeal. Now, nobody appeals the final decree. Well, if they do, I've never heard of it. I was the first one, I think, to ever did that. But, you know, anytime you have a litigation, if you don't like the outcome of it, you can appeal. You know, it could be on constitutional grounds, factual grounds. It could be fraud grounds, jurisdiction grounds. I mean, there's all kinds of grounds for appeal. But normal people don't appeal the decree of the divorce judge to divorce court. So, anyway, I didn't appeal. I told the judge that's to stay out of jail for contempt. You know, I'm going to appeal. I had 30 days to do that. Then I didn't do that, see? Which I don't have to. I mean, upon further review, I determined that, no, I don't think I will appeal. I think the judge's decision is probably pretty correct. So if you don't appeal, at the end of the 30 days, the judge's order becomes a final order. And the judge ordered me to pay X number of dollars a month in child support. So when I didn't appeal, it became a final order, but it became a final order without my consent. That's very important, without my consent. Now, this admiralty court over here has jurisdiction over people who consent, people who have Siemens papers, people who have marriage licenses. The marriage license is, in effect, your Siemens papers in this regulated enterprise. Driver's license, that's your Siemens papers in this regulated enterprise. You want to participate in this regulated enterprise, you have to have these Siemens papers. Well, okay. Now, I'm happy to report to you good folks out there that I have a second wife. And I don't have a marriage license. How do you like that? Now, marriage licenses are fairly new. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but until about 1900, marriage licenses were very uncommon, not unheard of. But a license, by definition, is permission to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. Go look it up. So when you got your driver's license, you intended to break a law. The only reason that you would get a license is to give you permission to break a law. You want to do a criminal act when you get a license. The purpose for a license is to commit criminal acts, by definition. So, you know, let's face reality and let's figure out, well, what crime did you want to commit when you got your marriage license? You wanted to marry someone outside your race. It's the only reason that you need one. What law did you want to violate? You wanted to violate the law of God in Deuteronomy 7, verses 1 through 6. That's the law you wanted to violate, and that's why you got a marriage license. That's why the state issues marriage licenses. So you can violate that law. Now, here in America, if you were to ask somebody, did you, in fact, marry someone outside of your race? And 99% of the time, those people will say no, because only 1% of people practice interracial marriage here in the United States. But once you got the marriage license, you were ready, and you could have married somebody outside your race, for which you needed the state's permission to violate the law of God. And that's the purpose for getting these licenses, is so you can violate the law of God. Most people don't do it, but they're prepared, they're ready, you know. And then, well, now, if you're not going to marry outside your race, well, then what do you need the marriage license for? Well, the answer is you don't. I know it's customary, and everybody does it. But when you do that, you create a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state. And then the state has the power to regulate the terms and conditions of the marriage in many, many other areas, such as social lady can come take your children and put them in a foster home. such as now you have to educate your children in public school because we've got juvenile delinquency laws and compulsory education laws and things like that. And so the legislature now can legislate and draw up rules for you to follow, you and your wife to follow, which they could not have done if you didn't have the license. So it is true that the license does more than one thing. For instance, a driver's license, they'll tell you, well, the purpose for the driver's license is competency. Well, if that was the case, then how come we don't issue certificates of competence? So the license is in fact a competency certificate, but it's much more than that. Much more than that. So now, let me show you a little bit more to the story. I appeared in court, and Judge Brown was there, and the prosecutor in this case was Prosecutor Jacobs. He's now our local judge. But in those days, he was the prosecutor, and he came in, and he's just doing his job. I'm not criticizing the judge and the prosecutor now. And their job is to collect this back child support and then forward it on to the state of Idaho. And so the judge starts the proceedings off, and he says, now Mr. Gordon, he has to lay foundation. This is called foundation. So he asked me, 10 questions probably to lay foundation. Is your name George Gordon? Yeah. Did you receive a subpoena to be here today? Yeah. And are you appearing here today from that subpoena? I am. And when he got through laying the foundation questions, he said, now, Mr. Gordon, this is a child support action. And he said, are these five children named in this support action your children? Did you hear that question? Are these five children that are named in this support action, are these your children? And I said, no, sir, they are not. And the judge was just shocked. And so was the prosecutor. I'll bet you that these two men have been in here on these child support cases hundreds of times, if not thousands. And never has any father brought in here in a child support action ever said, no, these are not my children. And the judge, he was shocked, and he said, well, whose children are they? And I said, well, Judge, I'm not here today to tell you whose children they are. I'm here today to tell you whose children they are not, and they are not my children. Now, I did that so that we could set the record, because I suspect that this is going to have to be adjudicated in some superior court, that we're going to have to go up the appellate process here. We're going to have to go to God in the Holy of Holies, sitting on the mercy seat on the Day of Atonement, to settle this. That was kind of what I was thinking. So, anyway, the judge starts off, and he says, well, wait a minute. Were you married? Yes. Were you married to a woman named Patricia Gordon? I said, yes. He said, did you and this woman have any children together? And I said, yes. How many? I said, five. He said, well, was one of them named Ted? I said, yep, that's the firstborn. And he said, was one of them named Kathleen? I said, yep, that's the girl, second. One of them named Elaine? That's third. Do you have another one named George? Yes, sir. Another one named Robert? I did. And he said, why did you say that these are not your children? Now listen up, folks. I said, well, because I put them up for adoption. And they were adopted. And he said, when did you put them up for adoption? And I said, on the day that they were born. And I signed the adoption papers. It was the birth certificate. And I passed my seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. I gave the first three children, Ted, Kathleen, and Elaine to the state of California. And I gave the second two, George and Robert, to the state of Idaho. And that's why I subpoenaed in the attorney generals of California and Idaho. That was Ebel Younger of California and Jim Jones of Idaho to be here today to testify as to whose children these are. I put them up for adoption, and the state accepted, and they've taken the children, and the state is at this moment in time supporting their children, and they should. The state should support their children. I said, now, if you want to give these children to me, I will accept them, and I will support them. But they're not mine. They used to be mine, and I'm sorry that I gave them away. I made a mistake, and I'm sorry as hell. But, you know, what's been done has been done. Now, I had five children, and I passed my seed through the fire to Moloch, and that was a capital felony, and I stand accused, and I am guilty as hell to that crime. But I'm not guilty of failing to support the state's children. I don't have any responsibility there. And I'm not responsible for supporting my children because I don't have any. When I finished, the prosecutor stood up and moved to adjourn. And I stood up in opposition and I said, no, I oppose any continuance. This is the date and time certain for this case to be adjudicated. And I want to move forward. I want to produce witnesses, evidence, and testimony to these facts. And Judge Brown, his name is Charles Brown, we called him Charlie Brown. No relation to peanuts, no. But he said, the motion for continuance is granted. Well, okay, I thought that was kind of like kangaroo court, no. You set a date and time, I show up, and I'm ready. Now, they're not prepared to adjudicate this kind of an issue. They both recognized, hey, there's something here that we don't quite follow. This, you know, normally people, when they come in here and you say, are these your children? They say, yes, they are. And then the next question is, well, then why in the hell aren't you feeding them? Now, they asked me plainly, and I told them plainly, are these your children? I said, no, they're not. Now the burden is on the state to prove that these are my children. And they're not prepared to prove that. So they're going to give the prosecutor a second bite at the apple. They're going to allow him to go out and get the evidence that he needs to come back in here and win his case. So some time went by, and I got notice that the case had been removed. They're not going to do this in Ozark County. They're going to remove it over to Howell County. In fact, Charlie's not even going to sit on the case. They're going to move it over here to Judge Holstein. So there's a date and time set certain, and so I appeared. And Judge Holstein, now, we're not here now to determine in this hearing. We're not here to determine the custody or the ownership of the children. We're here to set a trial date. Now, here's where, in some cases, you'll run into skullduggery. It doesn't occur very often. But let me tell you, prosecutors and judges will sometimes, not very often, but sometimes, enter into a conspiracy for the express purpose of depriving citizens of their rights. They will work together and say, we've got to deal wisely with this guy so that we can lay him away. That happens, and it happened in this case. Now, Charlie Brown wasn't involved directly with this, we're going to lay this guy away, but John Jacobs was. And this Judge Holstein was. Now, let me describe this one to you. This is a sting, but this is a conspiratorial sting, and we're going to lay this guy Gordon away. When this happens, you know, you got to be on your toes here. So the judge starts off and he said, now we need to set this for trial. Well, that's right. We're going to have to set this for trial. You see, what Judge Charlie Brown had erred in, he dismissed my subpoenas for the two attorney generals. And when he dismissed those out, he quashed the subpoenas. He denied me due process and equal protection of the law. He denied me the opportunity to have witnesses for my defense. You can't do that. He got caught. So to recover, he continued, removed the case to another jurisdiction. Can he do that? Yeah, he can do that. Is it ethical? No. Is it fair? No. Do judges and prosecutors always act ethically and fairly? No. But, you know, it's within his discretion to do that, and he did it. Okay, so now, when that happens, you know, then we have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And so now the burden now, so I've got a heavier burden to bear. I've got to do it. So now I got to drive over here another 60 miles to another county. And Judge Holstein says, okay, well now, Mr. Gordon, we're going to set the trial date here. So he looks over at the prosecutor and he says, when would you like to set the trial date? And he said, September 26th. So I looked on my calendar and that was the Feast of Trumpets, an annual holy day. And I said to the judge, now, Judge, September 26th is a annual holy day called the Feast of Trumpets, and I can't appear on that day because it's an annual holy day. Now, how did this guy know that September 26th was an annual holy day? Well, because if you look on my webpage, you will see my calendar for the year. Hell, you can see. I put it right out there for everybody. And so he said, well, September 26th is open. And so I said, well, I can't do that. So then he looks over at me and he says, well, okay, well, then what's your proposed date? And I said, well, we can do it on the 25th or we can do it on the 27th. Either side of the 26th, but we can't do it on the 26th. Now, the prosecutor says, oh, no, I cannot do it on the 25th or the 27th. I can only do it on the 26th. And that's because I've got this and that and something else that I've got to attend to. So the judge says, well, okay, Mr. Prosecutor, name me another date. And so he comes back with a second date and he says, well, October, I think it was 5th or 6th, which is 10 days later, you know. And I said, well, excuse me, but that's the Day of Atonement. And I can't make it on the Day of Atonement because that's another annual holy day. And the judge said, well, when could you make it? And I said, well, I could make it on the day before or the day after or any other day for that matter. I mean, you know, it could be any of the 10 days from the 26th to the 4 days and 6 days, about the 6th. I could do it the 1st, the 2nd, the 3rd, the 4th. Hell, I'll come in on Sunday if you want. Or at night, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, any time I'm open, I'm doing everything I can to cooperate. I want to help in any way I can. But you know, from sundown Friday until sundown Saturday is the Sabbath, and from sundown to sundown are these annual holy days, and I can't do it on those days. God told me not to, and so, well, the judge says, okay, well, Mr. Jacobs, give us a third date, and he comes back, he says, okay, how about October the 12th? I said, well, wait a minute, no, it isn't the 12th, add 5 days to that, October the 11th. And I said, well, I can't make it because that's the Feast of Tabernacles. And the judge says, well, when can you make it? And I said, well, the day before or the day after. Or any of the days between the 5th and the 11th, you know, or after the 11th, you know, any day other than Saturday, the Sabbath. And so the judge said, well, okay. Now, the rule says that if the prosecution and the defense cannot agree on a date, and you have three potential dates. Each side gets to advance a day. Well, the prosecution, he advanced September 26th, October 5th, and 11th, and I said, no, I can't do it on those days because they're holy days, and I advanced the day before or the day after, and the prosecutor says, nope, I can't do it on those dates. So the judge says, then the rule leaves it up to me to decide what day we're going to schedule this. And he said, we're going to schedule this for October the 18th. And I said, Judge, wait a minute. That's the last great day of the feast. And I can't appear on the, that's an annual holy day. And so the judge says, well, those are the rules, and the 18th is it. And if you're not here, then you're going to lose by default. Now, look at what they've done. They've taken my calendar, picked the 4 days that they knew that they could advance, that I would not appear, so that they could beat me, not on the merits of are these or are these not my children, but on a technical move, did you or did you not appear at the date and time certain? Now, that's very crafty on the part of Judge Holstein and Prosecutor Jacobs. But will it hold up? To find out that answer, you'll have to stand by while we do our mid-program announcements, and then we'll come back and we'll answer that question. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, they don't necessarily mean that the authors and publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and just tune in there and see what you see. And if you like it, buy it. And if you don't like it, let it lie. Or you can call us direct. The number is 417-273-4967. That free general law CD package, if you want a copy of it, you can download it off of our website at georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page. All right, we're taking a look here at what we call the sting stories. Now, in this case, little Georgie Gordon has just been stung. Judge Holstein and Prosecutor Jacobs now following the rules of court in setting a trial date have led me right down the primrose path. They have the annual holy days. They know that I will not, cannot, it's against the law for me as a Hebrew, to violate these holy days. They have scheduled, they've proposed that the scheduling of the trial be on the Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and Last Great Day. And they got it off my webpage. Is this unethical? Oh, talk about ethics now. Is this cheating? Is this fair? Well, no, it isn't. Is it legal? Absolutely. Have they violated any laws? Well, yeah, if anybody knew about it, they probably would be braided, maybe. You know, somebody might say, hey, naughty, naughty. Now, I'm caught between a rock and a hard spot, and so I don't show up on the date and time, and judgment is entered against me. Not on the merits, it's entered against me. So now the burden is for me to overcome this. And so now I've got this adverse judgment. We have never had an opportunity to defend. But then they offered me the opportunity to defend, and I didn't avail myself of that opportunity. And that's the way the rules are written. So I had to appeal. So I took my appeal up to the Missouri Court of Appeals in Springfield. And they looked at it and they said, well, you know, they offered him a date and he didn't take it. Now, I came in and said, well, these guys are in violation of the First Amendment because these are the annual holy days. And they came back and said, no, no, we looked at the Jewish calendar. And the Jewish holy days did not fall on those dates. Well, boys and girls, I'm not a Jew, and I'm not following the Jewish calendar. I'm a Hebrew, and I'm following the biblical dates, not biblical calendar, but the biblical dates, and that isn't at issue. So, the Court of Appeals ruled against me. Then I appealed to the state Supreme Court. Now, remember, we're talking about state rules here. So, you know, the state Supreme Court says, you know, we're going to uphold the lower courts on this. And, you know, you had your chance, Gordon, and you blew it. You needed to appear, you know, on the 18th, and you didn't appear. So, you know, you had notice, you had opportunity to defend, and you failed, and so therefore you lose. So, you know, last court I got left, you know, is the U.S. Supreme Court. And that one's tricky because, you know, they get about 10,000 appeals a year. They only write about 100 and some odd opinions, 140 one year. That's kind of a big year. So, you know, my chance of getting heard by the U.S. Supreme Court are about slim and none. That's about where you're at. However, there is a rule that comes into play here, and there is a process or procedure. Now, here's the way this works. Each one of our justices on the Supreme Court, there's nine of them, they have a circuit. And there's 11 of these circuits now in the United States. And so the Chief Justice, he has a circuit or two, and then another justice has a circuit or two. And then the rest of them all have one circuit. And the Eighth Circuit is presided over by Judge Thomas, the black judge on the court. Well, Judge Thomas, when these petitions come in, his law clerks, they look at them, and then they decide, well, is this meritorious? Is this something that we want to take up here? And if it is, if they want the whole court to take it up, then they propose it on a Friday. And then if four justices agree, then they'll take it up and they'll write an opinion on it. You know, like Roe versus Wade, Yoder versus Wisconsin, Miranda versus Arizona. That's where you get written up in the big time. Now, there's another process that comes down here. If it's an administrative rule that we're dealing with there, the justices take care of those, all of them by themselves. And so in this case, we're talking about a religious free exercise claim, equal protection and due process on a procedural move. You know, set the date. And he has the power to do that. And he wrote an opinion, and he upbraided Judge Holstein and Judge now Jacobs. He was Prosecutor Jacobs then. And then he said, hey, boys, wake up and smell the coffee here. This guy comes in here and he says that he's got these four annual holy days, and he can't make his appearance on those days, and we have to presume that he's telling the truth. And he voluntarily said, look, I'll do it the day before or the day after, but not on that day. And you guys are just as guilty, you know, and it looks like more guilty of conspiring together because you took his dates off of his webpage. He didn't have an opportunity to pick the date, you know, that you couldn't appear, but you had the opportunity to pick the dates when he couldn't appear. So he remanded it for further proceedings. Now, he doesn't rule in my favor. He doesn't rule for me. He doesn't rule against me. He just said, hey, give this guy his day in court. Let him bring in his witnesses, evidence, and testimony. And then, if you rule against him, you can bring it back and we'll review it then. But at this moment in time, there's nothing for the Supreme Court to review. All we're going to do is say, give him his day in court. Now, I can sit here today and tell you, I never did get my day in court. And that's because Judge Holstein and Prosecutor Jacobs never rescheduled that for rehearing. Now, remember when we were talking about Morton Grove, Illinois? And the student came into my office and he said, how do you think the Supreme Court is going to rule on this issue? And I said, they're not going to rule on it. But the newspapers are all going to say, U.S. Supreme Court upholds Morton Grove gun control ordinance. All right, so now let's apply that principle to this case that I'm describing to you. I could come to you today and say, ha-ha, the Supreme Court upholds George Gordon's position that these aren't his children. Couldn't I? I mean, that's what the news media did in the Morton Grove case. But that's not true. That isn't what the Supreme Court did. The Supreme Court never ruled one way or the other. The issue never came up to the Supreme Court as to whether these five children are or are not George Gordon's children, whether or not the birth certificates have anything to do with the fact that he put his seed up and passed his seed through the fire to Moloch. You know, that's anecdotal. And I don't deny it. It's anecdotal. But let me tell you something. Judge Holstein and Prosecutor Jacobs both believed it. And if they hadn't believed it, they would have brought the case back for trial, and we would have tried the case, and they would have proved that these are my children, and proved that I owed the child support, and then thrown my sorry hind end in jail for not paying it. A little doubt in my mind, because neither one of them liked me very much. Now, the Justice Thomas did not decide those issues. Those issues were never brought up to him. I never suggested to him that these aren't my children, or that the Attorney General of California, Evel Younger, you know, his subpoena was quashed or what. He never knew anything about that. All he knew was this guy Gordon said he's not a Jew, he is a Hebrew, these are his holy days, First Amendment protects that, and he ruled on that issue. And he said, hey, give this guy his day in court. Now, our two conspirators over here, the judge and the prosecutor, They recognized right away that, hey, wait a minute, we've got a constitutional issue here. And when they checked up, they found out I had not agreed to the child support. I didn't sign the final decree. Now, that's imperative. Remember what we learned here the last time. In Brown, Volume 2, page 100, lays down the rule in these terms. The general rule is that the Admiralty acts only in rem, and that no person can be subject to that jurisdiction but by his consent, expressed by his entering into a stipulation. Now, when you go into the divorce court, what you're doing here is you're getting a divorce, which is the new contract. It's going to be the boy, the girl, and the state in a divorce contract instead of the boy, the girl, and the state in a marriage contract. That's all. You're just trading one contract for another. Now, if you want to get out of these contracts over here, then you're going to have to learn how to do that. And that's why today I said, you know, before you get into a marriage, why don't you ask the question, do we really want a marriage license? Because except for, now for you people that are going to marry interracially, you got a white man or a white woman, and there's a black man or a black woman, and they're going to interracially marry, or some Oriental or some other combination. You need a marriage license so that you can violate the law of God. Now, for the other 99% of you, you don't need that license. So if you don't need that license, well, then what's your problem? You know, wouldn't you be better off making your own marriage contract? Now, again, most people are incompetent, and they cannot make a prenuptial agreement. They rely upon the state to write up these rules and regulations and these laws and stipulations and so on. And that's fine. Listen, most people are, in fact, incompetent, and they need a guardian. And if you're incompetent and you need a guardian, I guess the state's as good a guardian as any. I'm not sitting here saying, you know, the state is remiss because they have formulated a program here for incompetent people who cannot write a premarital agreement or a prenuptial agreement. But there might be a few of you out there, there might be some of you out there that are kind of wild March hares, and you say to yourself, gee, this concept of freedom and responsibility intrigues me, and I would like to do that. I want to remind you that if you become free and responsible, that there are also penalties that go along with that. That this isn't anarchy. I'm not suggesting to you, you know, that you don't have duties that go along with it. But the duties are somewhat different, and I think the outcome is somewhat different. I'm perfectly satisfied with my marriage without a marriage license to my second wife. She seems to be pretty happy and satisfied with the state of affairs. At least that's what she told me. Now, my first wife was not. She needed a marriage license, and so did I. When we were first married at age 23, both of us were incompetent. We were legally incompetent. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. And I suppose that the state of California offering us this prenuptial agreement with a three-party limited general partnership pursuant to the marriage license was probably a pretty good idea. And I did it. Then when the divorce came down, it was a summary process. There weren't any rights involved. There was a chancellor. His name was Judge Carey, and he said, this is the way it's going to be. By that time, I recognized my position and my dilemma. It's like being a seaman on the ship, and you're caught up now in a court-martial, and you're being prosecuted under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You need to wake up and smell the coffee here, sailor. You know, we're not talking about rights. We're not talking about First, Second, Third, and Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights here. We're talking about you sit down, you shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told, or it's going to hurt real bad. That's what my daddy told me one time. So I'm not here arguing with the judges. I just wanted to point out that I got stung by a judge and a prosecutor. They put me into a sting, and they executed it perfectly. Now, when that happens, can you extricate yourself from the sting? And in this case, I did. Now, doesn't mean that that's the way it's always going to come out, but that's the way it came out in that case. Now, that's an anecdotal case, and I don't deny it. But when we go through these anecdotal cases, kind of like Judge Willis, you know, I told you about last time, who said, now you either sign that form or face the consequences. Well, what are the consequences? Well, nothing. Ziggy Crothers, you know, same thing. You're going to Leavenworth if you don't sign up. Take this oath. No, no. We don't have to take these oaths. We do not have to violate the law of God. Any time that there's a biblical injunction that says don't do that, there can be no penalty, there can be no sanction for doing that. Now, there's a couple of examples, though, where penalties and sanctions were in fact imposed when somebody said, no, I'm not going to do that. The number one case is Daniel. Do you remember Daniel in the lion's den? That was quite a story. Daniel was a Hebrew practicing the law of God. He was in national captivity. The Babylonians had captured his nation. This was Judah, the nation of Judah. And he was taken off to Babylon. He was in captivity. Now, while he was there, he became a public official. Not exactly clear what his duties were, but he became a public official. He was a prince. And in the administration of his duties, he was supposed to worship the gods of Babylon, and he didn't do that. You know, he was supposed to salute, sing the Star Spangled Banner, and pledge allegiance to the flag, and whatever it was he did, he didn't do it. And so the political opposition came against him and said, hey, listen, this guy's in violation of the laws. He's committing treason against the king, against the nation. He's the equivalent today of being a terrorist, and he needs to be prosecuted and jailed for this. And so the penalty, I'm sure they gave him a trial, and I'm sure he had all of the witnesses and due process and all of the accoutrements that go along with a fair trial in his day, and all of the due process and equal protection of the laws and fair trial and all that. But they found him guilty, and the penalty was death. And the way they decided to kill him was to throw him in a lion's den and let the lions kill him and chew him up and eat him. That was the modality. Now today, here in this country, we give people lethal injection. In some places, we electrocute them, and sometimes we gas them, and in one state, we shoot them. You know, so in that day and age, the penalty was, well, I'm going to throw him in with the lions. Now they threw him into the lion's den, and an angel showed up. And the angel stood between him and the lions, and he was in there for 24 hours, and I'm sure the lions were hungry, but they didn't eat Daniel. Now, that's pretty significant, and it tells us a little story here. Man doesn't live by bread alone, if you'll remember, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And so, one of the benefits that we receive is that you shall live for 70 years, all of your days will be fulfilled. It's one of your 33 benefits. And Moses negotiated that benefit with God up on top of the mount. Remember, he was up there for 40 days? Well, he wasn't up there playing chess. He was up there negotiating the terms and conditions of the old covenant. And then he was up there 40 days. And it took 40 days to hammer that out. And then he came down with the two tables of stone the first time, broke them, went back up, got a second two tables, came down with the parchment, put the two tables of stone, the Ten Commandments, and the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments into the Ark of the Covenant. And then he came to the people and he said, hey, boys and girls, do you agree with these terms and conditions based upon the tender offer that was made by God here, you know, 40 days ago or so? And the people said, yea, yea, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. That's recorded now in Exodus 24, verse 7. Now, what I'm repeating here to you, what I'm telling you here is, you know, boys and girls, we've got a contract with our Creator. And under the terms and conditions of the contract, when they threw Daniel into the lion's den, God was faced with a breach of contract. He was face to face with a wrongful death suit that was going to be brought against him by Daniel. Now remember, God said, I'm the God that cannot lie, and I'll honor my contract with you to 1,000 generations. Now, that being the case, God had a duty to protect Daniel. He had a legal duty to save his life, and he did. He fulfilled his legal duty. Daniel came out of the lion's den, then went on to live to be 70 years old. Now, I don't know when Daniel died, but I do know that he got his full 25,550 days. That's 70 years, 70 years. Now, had he died in there, God now would have been remiss. He would have been in breach of contract. He would have violated the terms and conditions of his contract. Now, he said he wouldn't do that. But boys and girls, you and I have been in breach of contract, past tense, present tense, and probably future tense, unless you clean up your act. So it's imperative then that we proceed forward from this point on and obey God and keep His commandments. In fact, in Acts 5, verse 29, I think it was Peter that made this observation. He said, we ought to obey God rather than men. When there's a choice to be made, we ought to obey God rather than men. When I said to Judge Holstein and Prosecutor Jacobs, I cannot appear on those four dates, I simply acquiesced to the requirement, the legal requirement in Acts 5:29, we ought to obey God rather than men. If you throw me into the fiery furnace, then I'll have to rely upon God to bail me out. He did. Supreme Court of the United States bailed me out. Justice Thomas bailed me out. And then when the legal issue was put back before the trial court, they decided, hey, like Rosa Parks, let's learn a lesson from Rosa Parks. We don't want to go there. We don't want to find out what the answer to this is. Well, I'm happy with that. I'm happy. I didn't pay the child support. I know you're sitting out there saying, why, you dirty, low-down, no-good so-and-so. You didn't pay the support for your children. I just told you, boys and girls, I don't have any children. I gave them away. And the state took them. And the state ought to support them. And the state did. Now, let's try it this way. Let's suppose that, for whatever reason, I decided to give my children to you. And now you have my children. You have adopted my children. Do I have some duty to pay you child support? Come on, wake up and smell the coffee here, children. When I adopt your children, you don't have any duty from that point forward to support them. And then when you adopt mine, I don't have that duty. Well, that's all the state's doing when they take that birth certificate. They're adopting your children. They don't want to feed them, clothe them, and house them. They want you to do that. And, you know, you people volunteer to do that. And that's your decision. Nobody's forcing you to do it. Hey, I'm about out of time again, so I'm going to have to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station.